It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. What are we talking about today, Cecil?
Ben, the last few weeks, we've been Harvell & Collins talking about Real Property 101.
That's right, yes.
And we've talked about tenants by entirety, which is property between a husband and wife. We've talked about the life estate. We've talked about the remainder interest. And we've talked about the tenants in common, which, of course, is undivided interest, if you will, between two or more persons. And so today we want to kind of channel in on tenants in common, and because, Ben, it is the most typical way that we see property titled.
Especially outside of marriage.
Exactly. Right. I mean, now let's review, and then we want to talk about the rights of tenants in common owners. You know, when folks inherit property, three children, two children, four children, inherit mom and dad's property. They inherit it many times, tenants in common. Just, you know, a third, a third, and a third. A will typically says, I hereby devise and bequeath the rest remainder of my property, including real and personal property, to my children equally. Okay? A third, a third, and a third. So they now own the property, tenants in common. Another way in which tenants in common property evolves, which is typical, is between, you know, friends, business partners. They just simply, you know, say, hey, I think this would be great for us to own this together. And they buy a piece of property and they title it 50-50, or three folks go together and title a property a third, a third, and a third. Again, we have a tenants in common owner.
Right.
Now, things go well for, we hope, forever and a day, but sometimes they don't. And so Wes and I this morning want to talk about what do you do if you are in a tenants in common, relationship, ownership of property, and yet for some reason things are not going well and you want out. You're the only one paying the taxes. You're the only one maintaining the property. You just simply can no longer afford to own that property, and it maybe has a mortgage on it. What do you do as a tenants in common owner in order to get out of the property? Now, if you can agree with your other owners, then bingo, you know, we all agree. We're going to list the property and sell it, okay? Or, you know, the price of the property is, we agree, $150,000, and I own half of it. I will pay you $75,000 for your half, and now I own it all.
Right.
These are all, you know, amicable resolutions to the problem. We either sell it, we agree to a price, and buy each other out. All of that is good. But if you cannot agree, which we see a lot of this, Ben, in our practice and have for a long, long time, then we move into what is known as a partitioning action, or a petition, if you will, a filing with the clerk of court to partition or force now the division of the property. And this is an absolute right of a tenants in common owner to be able to come forward and force, if you will, resolution as to the title of this property. Part of the reason for that is because the public policy argument is that real property, you know, is held in high regard by the law, and we want it to always be productive and being available to be used at its highest use. And when property is owned by five or six people and they can't agree about ownership, then it's not necessarily being used at its highest and best use. And therefore, the law supports any tenants in common owner in a procedure where they can come forth and force the resolution of the ownership of this property.
So now you get to this petition, the petition to partition. And,
correct.
And Wes, tell us how that works.
Well, of course, a petition to partition, as we've mentioned before on the program, is a special proceeding. It's before the clerk of court,
mm-hmm.
and you just file basically what would amount to a complaint. It's like kind of like filing a lawsuit. You have to give all the parties who would have any interest in this property notice so
mm-hmm.
that the parties can come forward and speak their piece about it. But, you know, you're filing this petition to partition. You're requesting certain relief in the petition that you file. You may ask for it to be actually divided. You may ask for it to be sold. You may ask for a public sale. You may ask for a private sale.
Mm-hmm.
You may ask for offsets or credits to be applied. So the petition that gets filed and served is what starts the process. And once we get into the process, a lot of times these cases will be mediated. There's a right to request of the clerk of court for a court-ordered mediation
mm-hmm.
where the court can, you know, hear from the parties and make a determination as to whether it will possibly be useful, fruitful in order to proceed, you know, with a mediation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's start just not there for a second. If the clerk of court sees that that's a good
possibility,
way to go.
Right.
Then what happens there? Is there a mediator hired? How does that work?
That's a good question. Yeah. So the clerk is just going to indicate that, yes, this is ordered to mediation, and then you have to mediate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, and when you mediate in a court order mediation, you have to participate in that mediation in good faith. You have to show up. The parties have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to make a good faith effort to resolve it. Now, you don't have to resolve it,
right?
But you got to at least try, or make it appear as though you're trying. Put it that way. But as far as a mediator goes, normally the parties will communicate to one another and make a decision about who they want to serve as the mediator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are several good mediators around in this particular area that are well schooled in this issue and a lot of other issues. And, you know, in the event that the parties can come to an agreement with regard to the mediator, then it's just a matter of contacting that mediator and getting on his schedule or her schedule
mm-hmm.
and setting it at someone's office. It would either
right.
be the mediator's office or one of the attorney's offices, you know, that type thing. And the mediation itself is really just, an alternative dispute resolution where what you're doing is the parties are coming together and communicating with each other to try to resolve the issues.
Mm-hmm.
The mediator serves as a facilitator and a communicator between the parties, doesn't serve as a judge. The mediator doesn't
right.
have the right to, you know.
It's not binding.
Right, hit the gavel on
right.
the table and say, this is the way it's going to be. You know, this is the mediator is just really trying to get the parties to communicate so that, you know, hopefully we can avoid going to the next step, which would be a hearing and then actually appointment of commissioners.
And
I can talk about that, you know, in a second. But, you know, the things you'd be doing at a mediation would be if it's a large tract of property,
mm-hmm.
then you may have a surveyor there and, you know, you could just be talking about, you know, where are we going to put this?
Where's the line going to go?
This division line.
Right.
You know.
Who gets the creek and who doesn't?
That's right, that kind of thing. And maybe we can come to that resolution as mm-hmm. opposed to going through the expense that's ahead of us
mm-hmm.
with regard to the partition proceeding. Or if it's a property that can't be divided in kind, like, you know, a house, then, you know, we could come to an agreement with regard to maybe one party buying out the other.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could come to an agreement with regard to possibly listing the property for sale within certain parameters.
So the mediation could come to agreement on the whole issue. And if they sign that, then that's binding?
Right.
Right.
In the event a settlement agreement, mm-hmm. a mediated settlement agreement is signed, sealed, and delivered, then it's something that would be binding among the parties, yes.
Say that it's not. They don't come to an agreement. But maybe they come to an agreement on a number of the issues.
Right.
They could take that back and then settle the rest in a petition.
Right. I mean, you know, I've certainly had multiple mediations before where, you know, we've resolved some issues but not all the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then the parties are bound by that settlement agreement, partial settlement agreement
right.
with regard to those issues.
Okay. That is back to court.
Then it's back to court in the event that we don't get it resolved and, you know, in the event that it's a tract that can be divided in kind, then there are going to be commissioners appointed to actually evaluate the property, maybe do some survey work. They'll meet maybe several times, go on the property. They'll study. They'll, mm-hmm. they'll get educated about the property, and then they'll put together a report. And that report basically will be a report to the clerk of court indicating this is what we would think would be a fair division. And then the court is going yeah. to make the determination as to how it's actually divided, but that's
right.
That information is provided to the court.
And that carries a lot of weight.
Oh, yeah, it carries yeah. a lot of weight, yeah.
So now with this part with the commissioners being appointed, I mean, this is a small community. A lot of people know everybody. I
right.
mean, are, is it absolutely necessary that you have people that are not familiar with the other with the parties involved? Or is that, I mean, that seems like a near impossibility.
That would be our choice, mm-hmm. you know, that we don't have a commissioner that feels as though they have some obligation to one of the parties.
Oh, sure.
But you don't
yeah.
always...
But they may know them.
You don't, yeah, you don't always know that.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, so, but, you know, usually when you see a commissioner's report and you see how the property's been divided, you know, it's not necessarily the commissioners are saying, well, you know, brother, you get this side, sister, you got that side.
Right.
They may just say, here's where we think a reasonable division would be to have equal valued parts.
Right.
And then court, maybe you can make the decision.
As to who
it's kind of like the old situation where you tell the child to, you can cut the cake in half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You cut it in half, and then the other one, you get to pick which side you want.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's kind of one of those type deals. So they don't get upset about who gets the bigger piece.
We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys of Law. And I think after we're done with Property 101, we can take that section of the bar now.
So right.
We'll be about done with that.
Right.
We'll have more to come in just a bit. And if you would like to call in with a question, you can do so now.
Call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. And we're talking about ownership of property, and we're now into the weeds a little bit about
yeah.
The petition to partition.
Yeah, I always get into the weeds a little too
That's
much.
That's all right.
I think.
That's what we're here for. We mow down the weeds.
That's right.
That's what we're doing.
All right. So.
So anyway, now you're back at the court. You've gone through mediation, maybe, and there's a report, or you don't agree. And you're
right.
back, and now what do you do?
Right, so the commissioners are appointed, and mm-hmm. if that's a situation where the property can be divided, then we can go through that process of the report being prepared. Now, you can object to the report. There's a right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just trying to find some equity here with regard to the division of the property
sure.
is what we're doing. But there is, in the statute, multiple opportunities to object to that report and have that objection, you know, to be heard by the court. In the event that we're dealing with a property that is can't be divided, but it has to be sold, then we're not talking about a division of the property itself. We're talking about a sale of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And then
division of assets.
That's right. Right. And commissioners or a commissioner will be appointed in that one, that type situation as well. And, you know, you don't have to necessarily have, you know, like an appraiser and surveyor
right.
and all that. I mean, a lot of times you'll have maybe even the attorneys of both parties serve as co-commissioners if the parties agree.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the co-commissioners are doing in a sale is, you know, they have to give proper notice under the statute. They have to handle the money correctly. You know, they really just are acting kind of like a foreclosure trustee almost.
Mm-hmm.
They're pressing the situation forward, the sale forward,
mm-hmm.
that type thing. So there are some decisions to be made with regard to the sale of the property, of course, whether it's going to be a public sale or a private sale. Public sale would be courthouse steps,
mm-hmm.
like a foreclosure sale, and then there's a 10-day upset bid period, just like the public sale, standard public sale statute. So then any time there's a bid, then any other, you know, party may come in and upset that bid by a certain statutory
right.
amount,
sure.
$750 or 5% higher.
With various deposits on hand.
That's so, right. So. You have to actually deposit the funds with the court,
mm-hmm.
and then a new 10 days starts. With a private sale, You also have an upset bid period with a private sale, but it's not as advertised. It's not as publicized. It's not as well known, you know, that this is something that's going forward in that regard. And usually in a private sale, you either already have a buyer that you think is going to buy the property, or you're listing the property for sale. So the co-commissioners would be, you know, selecting a realtor, hopefully that the parties agree with. The realtor's going to set the price, and then the co-commissioners are going to make a decision as to, you know, whether we accept or reject any offers that come in.
That's one of the reasons why you don't have upset bids as much, because if you have a listed property, the highest bid,
the highest
money is going to take
it
anyway.
The market's going to work there and bring us the highest number the market will bring. You also have the right to go before the clerk of court and petition for credits and offsets. I mean, let's say that one party has paid the insurance and the taxes and the maintenance and all this stuff relative to the property, to maintain the property, to keep the property. But, you know, the other parties, they haven't done anything, you know, in that regard. Then you can file a motion with the clerk, and the clerk has broad discretion in those type issues, you know, to consider whether there be an offset or a credit applied to, you know, this particular person who has contributed to the property more than others.
Right.
So, you know, the way that works is that upon the sale, then the money comes into the co-commissioners. You got to, you know, reimburse the party that's entitled to the credit as per order of the court, and then the rest will be divided as per the ownership interest. Yep. After commissioners are paid, and there's commission involved in that statutorily, some other expenses associated with the sale, not a whole lot, but some, and then whatever's left at the end, surplus is then.
Now, this is, I know this often comes up in the case if somebody's inherited a home place.
Right.
And you've got to use your example, Cecil, three siblings that get this. One of them maybe is living in it and then wants some offsets, et cetera. After that's all said and done, is there personal property still left to be distributed?
No. This procedure has nothing to do with personal property.
That's post-probate, then.
Well, whatever the context might be.
Could be a completely different issue.
This is real property 101.
Right.
Only real property.
Right.
Now, real property, you know, we many times get the question, Ben, you know, it's fun. It's a good question. I remember getting the title to my house, my deed to the land. But then I built the house. I don't think I ever got a deed to the house.
Right.
Or I put in this very nice fence, or I put in a pool, or I built a garage. You know, I don't remember getting a deed to those things. Well, in North Carolina, you have a deed to the land, and any improvement to the land is included within the parameters of that deed. So that is included in this petition to partition actioning.
Right. Yeah.
You know, any fixed improvement to the land, garages, fences, pools, things of that nature. But in terms of personal property, items within the house, movable things, that, of course, is a whole other body of law.
Okay. All right. More to come in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. If you would like to join us, 800-818-2255 are these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys of law here on the Talk Station, talking about the petition to partition and actually getting pretty much down to the end of it here.
You know,
right?
Ben, we are, and it's great. The details are so important. But, you know, this procedure is not overwhelming. I mean, I don't want our listeners to think that this is just a completely, you know, bewildering process. This is a fairly straightforward process, all things considered.
Yeah.
We've got some in our office that are very, very complex going on right now. But a petition to partition action is a fairly standard procedure, and it pretty much falls in line pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Most of the reports and findings, you know, are – are forms, AOC forms, if you will. It's not a procedure that we would recommend that a client go alone, and go file without some assistance from a lawyer. But they fall in line. We also need to keep in mind that usually when a tenants in common owner comes forward and files something like this, it tends to force the hand of the others.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many times in these files, there can be resolution.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, you, if you kind of contrast this type of litigation, which it is litigation, mm-hmm. you're filing a petition, you're having to serve all parties, parties respond, but contrast that to, you know, more of a full-blown lawsuit type situation.
Right.
Well, you know, in the lawsuit, you're having to deal with discovery issues, you're having to deal with potentially hearings on those, you're having to deal with dispositive motions like motions to dismiss,
mm-hmm.
summary judgment motions, which, you know, require a heck of a lot of prep by the attorneys,
mm-hmm.
a lot of time to properly get prepared for those. You don't have jury issues here in a petition to partition. It mm-hmm. varies streamlined by statute as to the issues that are going to be dealt with, and they're really not that difficult issues. However, I would agree with Cecil. There are several pitfalls there that, you know, unwary litigant could potentially step into that could create some problems for them. So, although it's not like one of the most complicated things us attorneys deal with,
mm-hmm.
we deal with it every day, and therefore it's probably best in a petition to partition proceeding to have legal counsel. And frankly, 95% of them I deal with, both parties have an attorney, and that's just the way it should be, so there's not mistakes being made.
Can that decision by the clerk be appealed?
Yeah, you have the right to appeal, but it has to be a pretty egregious abuse of discretion in mm-hmm. order to have it set aside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the standard is pretty high on appeal.
If you want to find out more about how to have the questions in your legal life answered, you can call on the folks at Harbell & Collins Attorneys at Law. You can reach them at 252-726-9050. That's 726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Morgan City. Online at harbellandcollins.com.